Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Missy Elliott, Mary J. Blige, Monica, Eve, Randy, Ashanti, Jadakiss, and Wyclef Jean are rallying up the youth vote with a strong bass, with a good beat, and young voters are responding, not only to music, but to September 11th, to the war in Iraq, to the economy. In just 4 days, millions of first-time voters will cast their ballots. Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. College-age voters are left-leaning. They trust Kerry more than Bush, but say Bush is the stronger leader. That according to a Harvard University Institute of Politics study. They care about the economy. Second on their list, the war in Iraq. 3 million students volunteered on a presidential campaign this year. Tonight, On Point, we talk to four young voters about their choices for the Oval Office. Are you casting your first ever vote in this presidential election? If so, who's got it and why? Do 20-somethings and 50-somethings have the same stakes in the economy, homeland security, and civil liberties? What's your question for America's newest voters? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now in the studio is David King, lecturer in public policy at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. He's also associate director of the Institute of Politics at Harvard, a forum which engages young people in politics and public service. He oversees several large national surveys that explore youth attitudes about politics, and we're going to talk about that this evening along with a lot of other things. David, thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Thank you, Bob.
Let me start by asking the broad question. What's motivating young voters in this election?
Well, it's primarily actually reaction to the war in Iraq. They feel that they have a stake in politics in a way that they haven't felt since the end of the Vietnam War. Also, there's a shift in attitudes generally toward politics. It used to be uncool, something that only a few kids would want to be involved with or associated with. That's changed dramatically since 9/11. All of the attitudinal barriers, you know, do you believe that politicians are motivated by selfish reasons, or to politics, does it ever have tangible results for you, or is politics relevant to your life right now? All of these indicators have changed remarkably since 9/11. The kids who are in college today were in high school then. They were transformed by a political event, and they're about to vote for the first time in their lives.
So 9/11, the event, stripped away all that reluctance to get involved?
It's a combination of 9/11, the event, plus the fact that this generation, this millennial generation, is very much oriented towards helping others and helping themselves and the community. This is the highest participation rate of community service that we've had in generations. So it's that created a fertile ground for very successful marketing of the youth vote.
In what way? What do you mean by that?
Well, it used to not be cool to vote. The nerdy kids would vote. Today on college campuses, you don't want to be the one who raises your hand and says, I'm not interested. Young people on college campuses are following this race with remarkable intensity. When we ask, are you following this race closely or very closely? 87% of college undergraduates are following this race, quote, very closely. Now, that's the highest one can possibly imagine. Those are the same numbers that in the mid-1980s we found for American adults following the explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger. That's the same percentage that we saw of American adults following the story of little Jessica McClure falling down a well. This is simply unprecedented on college campuses. In the last 24 hours, according to the survey, 75% of college students have talked about the presidential campaign with a friend.
Are there young more voters now in the raw numbers, and why is that?
Well, our projected turnout estimates for college students show a 20 to 25% surge in voting among college students, from 42% of college students in 2000 to approximately 53% expected turnout nationwide among college students. Now, it's important to remember that only a third of college-age youth are actually in college. Two-thirds are not. College students poll very much in favor of John Kerry. Those who are not in college do not poll in favor of John Kerry. They support the president. So there's an important stake for both the Republicans and the Democrats in turning out their own base in the youth vote.
Can you give me a little demographic fix in relation to who these kids are who are interested enough to say that they are going to vote? Who are these young people? Are they rich? Are they poor? Does the economic factor not matter?
The economic factor certainly matters. If they come from a poor household, they're less likely to say that they're going to vote now. There's no geographic difference in terms of following the news, but there's a significant impact if you're a college student in a swing state. College students in a swing state are far more likely to say that someone's tried to get them to vote, and they say they're more likely actually to vote.
Polls seem to show that John Kerry is more popular with young voters than George Bush. Doesn't it seem surprising that college-age voters it doesn't seem surprising that college-age voters line up with Democrats?
Well, it is actually surprising if we look at the numbers from the last 4 or 5 years on college campuses. The Republicans have been more popular, and Republican figures have been more popular than Democrats. College students for the last 10 years have been more conservative than the average American adult. The children of the baby boomers, especially at the end of the sort of the Generation X, was clearly more conservative. And to this day, the strongest supporters of the U.S. military are the youngest citizens. So there has been, just since last October, a very marked shift against George Bush and the presidency. Last October, college students were more supportive of George Bush than the average American adult. That's flipped on its head, and these young students are out there ready to vote.
On Point listeners, if you're a college-age student, are you planning on voting? Which candidate is going to get your X and Y? And if you're an adult out there, what are you hearing from your kids in your own family? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Oberlin, Ohio, is Renata Strauss, a senior and a political science major at Oberlin College. She's co-chair of the Oberlin College Democrats. Hi, Renata.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
And also with us from Jacksonville, Florida, is Andrew Dill. He's a junior and a business and political science major at the University of Georgia, chairman of the University College Republicans, which is the largest chapter of college Republicans nationally. He's in Florida this weekend campaigning on behalf of the Republican Party. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on tonight.
I want to ask both of you, what is it about John Kerry and George Bush that works for you? And Andrew, why don't I start with you?
Well, sure. Well, for me, I think we've touched earlier on the most important issues to college students in this election. The economy was mentioned, the war in Iraq was mentioned, and especially the attacks of 9/11, which seemed to really bring college students out into the forelight of getting involved in these campaigns. And I definitely think that's the two issues for me. I want a president who I know is going to support less taxes. I'm a junior. I'm a year away from graduating. I want to know that I'm going to have some Social Security protected, and I want to know that I'm going to have dollars there for me. And also, as I've watched my friends go over to Iraq and many other friends of mine that have gone over to that war, I think it's a place we need to be, and I want to know that my children won't have to deal with these terror threats to our country.
Renata, how about you and John Kerry?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Andrew hit on some of the points that are very important to me as well, but obviously we come from sort of different perspectives. As I've seen friends of mine go over to war in Iraq, my question, the question that resonates with me is, why are they there? And how well was it planned, that we would need them there still today? And being a senior in college and about ready to graduate, my concern is, will there be jobs, not just for me, but for friends of mine who didn't have the opportunity to go to college? And I think that John Kerry is the president who will restore the economy, give faith, give faith in the economy back to young people, as well as keep our national security as a top priority.
Well, let me come back to the war in Iraq for a second here, if I can. Observations from both of you about how the war is being discussed on campus and whether that's one of the prime motivators to get people beyond you. In your circle of friends, yes, but my guess is that both of you have very politically active circles of friends. Beyond that, is the war going to get other students to vote? Renata?
I would say that, at least at Oberlin College, it certainly is. That is an issue that has resonated very much so with this campus. When I was on last year, we had talked about the war quite a bit. And, when we first went to war with Iraq, we had about 2,000 out of 3,000 students walk off campus, along with many of our professors and even our college president. And we were very proud of her for that. And so I think that that's an issue that really hits home with us. The question of if we're in an academic institution, when we're supposed to be searching for the truth, we should also be looking for that coming from our presidential administration at the same time. And so I think that that really resonates very well, especially with college students today.
And Andrew, same on your campus?
Well, totally opposite reaction, I would say. The University of Georgia is somewhat of a conservative university. We're in a more liberal town than we'd like to be. But the war is definitely a hot topic. I mean, on all sides, on all fronts, the war is definitely in forefront. We've seen several demonstrations on our campus for both sides. We've seen they're there every week, once a week at our main spots on campus. And I think they're going to be a main factor for voting this year. I mean, I remember back in high school when 9/11 happened and the anger we felt as a young generation being attacked and seeing that happen to our country and letting terrorists come over here. It's never happened. We've never been attacked on the mainland. And it's very important to college-age students to be involved in that. I think the war is going to have a serious effect. I think that Renata talked about having her friends ask why they're there. A lot of my friends know exactly why they're there, what they're fighting for, and the mission. And it's that fact they don't want to have terrorism. Terrorism is a global war. Bush said that he's going to fight terror wherever it exists, not just in Afghanistan. We're going to fight terror wherever it exists. And terror is a global war. It's a different kind of war. It's a new kind of enemy. And I think college students understand that. At the University of Georgia, students are largely in support of the war. There are a few that aren't, but it's definitely going to be a hot topic, and I definitely think it's going to be a reason young people are going to turn out to the polls on November 2nd.
David King, as both Andrew and Renata were speaking about the war in Iraq and how it motivates them and how the issue is impacting students on their campuses, you were nodding up and down.
Well, that's right. It certainly is an important issue. And there's something fascinating in the conversation between Renata and Andrew that captures an important dynamic on college campuses and really with the youth vote generally, and that is the gender gap. The gender gap in the population as a whole is not so large this year, but on college campuses, George Bush and John Kerry are statistically tied among men, but among women students, John Kerry has a 23-point lead, and college women are actually more likely than college men to go ahead and vote. They were more likely to register.
Why do you find this significant?
Well, when you dig a little deeper into trying to understand why people are voting for different candidates, college men are far more likely to say that they are paying attention to the leadership characteristics of the candidates. And overall, by 13 points, college students in general think that George Bush is a stronger leader. Women are more likely to say they're paying attention to the issues and whether or not the candidate cares about someone like me. And by 13 points, they believe that that John Kerry is more likely to care about their kinds of issues. So there's this interesting tension between leadership and whether or not you want to be led where this president is going, and gender is absolutely driven right through all of this in college students.
We're talking tonight to young voters about who they want to see in the Oval Office, what issues are driving first-time voters to the polls, the economy, the war, security. First-time voters, who are you listening to? P. Diddy? Eminem? Paris Hilton? Your mom? The White House? The Kerry campaign? What's happening on your campus? What's the mood? Anger? Excitement? Apathy? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook tonight. This is On Point. Our guest this hour, David King, lecturer in public policy at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University, and two students, Andrew Dill from the University of Georgia and Renata Strauss, a senior at Oberlin College. We'll talk to more students as the evening goes on. Give us a call, 1-800-423-TALK.
Yo, this is Queen Latifah reminding y'all that we got the power and can't nobody stay in office unless we elect them to be there. If we don't want them there, we get rid of them by rocking the vote. I want to see all the youth out there doing what we got to do to control our nation.
Governmentalizing, people mobilizing, rising on up, revolutionary start. But enough about that, so it's back to the show. We record acrobatics, make the crowd go. There's a cat in the back by the bar, I don't know. And he won't put his hands up.
This is On Point. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight to young voters about Tuesday's big election. Rapper Eminem's new anti-Bush song, Mosh, is reaching an audience that Michael Moore's documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11, may never reach.
Now, this is our final hour. Let me be the voice and your strength and your choice. Let me simplify the rhyme just to amplify the noise. Try to amplify times it and multiply it by 16 million people all equal with this high pitch. Maybe we can reach Al-Qaeda through my speech. Let the president answer high anarchy. Strap him with an AK-47, let him go. Fight his own war, let him impress daddy that way.
Are you marching with Eminem to the voting booth on Tuesday? How important is the presidential election in your dorm, on your campus? Have you gone stumping for Bush, for Kerry, on and off campus? Do you plan to stay home election day? What questions do you have for America's youngest voters? Join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with David King, lecturer in public policy at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University, associate director of the Institute of Politics at Harvard, a forum which engages young people in politics and public service. He also oversees several large national surveys that explore youth attitudes about politics. From Oberlin, Ohio, Renata Strauss, a senior at Oberlin College and co-chair of the Oberlin College Democrats. And from Jacksonville, Florida, Andrew Dill, junior at the University of Georgia, chairman of the university's College Republicans. He's in Florida this weekend campaigning on behalf of the Republican Party. And right now we'd like to bring into the conversation two more college students. Joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada, is Ashante Faishel Golar, who's majoring in politics and African-American studies, a senior at UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Vice President of the University's College Democrats, President-elect of Young Democrats of Nevada, and also from Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, Charles Mitchell, Senior and History and Economics Major at Bucknell University, President of the University's Conservatives Club, and Vice Chairman of the Young Conservatives of Pennsylvania. Ashante and Charles, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me back.
Charles, let me ask you, first of all, do you think your vote matters in this election and why?
I really don't have a lot of patience, Bob, for people who claim that their votes don't matter. I mean, how many years ago was 2000? That's easy math right there. It was 4 years ago. The election was essentially decided by 500 votes. My vote, particularly in Pennsylvania, matters. It's essentially tied here. My vote has already been cast absentee, but still, I think it counts. And even, you know, I've been talking to, like, my friends in Massachusetts, where you guys are, and everybody knows which way Massachusetts is going to go. But even then, I think it matters to shape the popular vote. I mean, listen to all the comments that were made after President Bush won the Electoral College and not the popular vote. It adds legitimacy. And finally, so many people have died so that we have the right to vote. I really can't understand why people write it off the way they do.
Ashante, you're a major in politics in addition to African-American studies. What drew you to politics?
I have always just been very interested in politics ever since I was very little. But I think what I like the best is it's a right that we have to vote, to choose these people that elect us. And I feel as a citizen, you have a duty to become involved so you can get those people in office you feel will best represent your needs, your wants, what you believe. And ever since I could register to vote, I registered to vote, and I'm very active in the Democratic Party, and I plan to be until the day I die.
What issues motivate you?
tuition, the war in Iraq, senior citizens. I have a grandmother who's growing older, Medicare, jobs, Social Security. When I enter the workforce and I retire, will it be there for me? There's so many issues. Every issue directs someone in some way.
Charles, when you walk around the campus at Bucknell and you try to convince folks who aren't committed to one candidate or the other to vote to reelect President Bush, what's your chief argument?
Well, the only issue that really matters to me this time is the war. And I think that's shaped, as you guys were discussing earlier, by my age. I was a freshman in college when 9/11 happened. I had been here for maybe 2 weeks, and it really, I think it changed everything. It's so cliche to say that, but I think it did. And we finally realized as a country that we were under attack. And I think that it is unacceptable to return to the kind of 90s normalcy that we had, where we fought terrorism with law enforcement and with rhetoric, rather than recognizing that this is a war. You know, this has been a war for 25 years, and we've finally started fighting back. And especially, you know, that's going to affect us more than everybody. You know, you said earlier that that 50-year-olds and 20-year-olds have the same stakes in this. I don't really think so. This war is going to be taking up a whole lot more of my lifetime than it is of yours, and it's very important to me that it be fought the way it needs to be fought. We need to fight these people as vociferously as they have shown that they are quite willing and eager to fight us.
David King, you're sitting there on the other end of the desk, not at all surprised. I don't think, if I'm reading your face correctly, to hear these young people speak like this.
It's just wonderful to hear their voices and to hear their enthusiasm and the fact that they are engaged. And I hope that everyone who's not a college student and not a young person listening to this program understands the remarkable change in this generation. Young people today are more involved in the community, more involved in politics, and have a more optimistic, positive view about the future than we've seen in generations. And they need to make changes, especially in terms of political participation. If we look at young people today, birth up and through up until the age of 18, a majority of America's children are growing up in homes in which no parent present in that home votes. No parent in the present in the home votes. A majority of America's children. That's because America's children have been let down by the baby boomers and Gen X parents. And it's up to young people today to say, I care about politics. We can shape the future. And there are 511,000 elected officials in the United States, and it's going to be Renata and Andrew and Ashante and Charles and their friends who are going to take over those offices.
Assuming that that these four young people and their friends and peers who are politically active may have also come from homes where the parents didn't vote and didn't encourage political discussion, therefore did not encourage their kids to get involved or even register to vote. What's motivating this group to suddenly become active? I know earlier one of our guests said it was the horrible act of 9/11.
Yeah, they were like the paddles shocking the body politic in a heart attack, and it woke up this generation. But now we have a window of opportunity. If you create a voter, if someone becomes a voter at the first time they have an opportunity to vote in a presidential election, they remain voters the rest of their lives. If they're not regular voters by the time they're in their mid-20s, they're very unlikely to vote again for the rest of their lives. So these are precious years when kids are in college and of college age. So it's very exciting what's happening in this election.
Okay, let's bring some more voices to the program tonight. 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Alex is calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Alex, you're on Point.
Hi, I just wanted to make the point, and I think it was brought up before, that the previous election between Bush and Gore was so important to many young voters, and I was in my early years of college when that election took place, and I think it was a sort of a shock to every college student that your vote really does count. And I think that is actually going to make a big push in getting young people to the polls this election.
Andrew Dill, I know you feel that same way.
Absolutely. I mean, that's so important. We saw in 2000, Charles mentioned this too, that it was just 4 years ago. It was not very long ago that we saw that every vote counts. And it's not only your duty to vote, it's your responsibility to vote, and it's your responsibility to be an educated voter. And I think after 2000, we learned that, number one, voting is important, and number two, it's important to know about these candidates and know what we're voting for. And I think that's why this young population will vote a lot heavier on November 2nd.
Alex, thanks for your call. Let's take another. David is dialing from Moorhead City, North Carolina. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
I'm just calling to talk to you about a phenomenon that I've seen at Duke University. Students who come from out of state who are switching their registration to in-state because of the closeness of the election, because they feel like they come from, say, a safe Democratic state, and they're going to switch their registration to North Carolina where they can affect the Senate race, where Erskine Bowles and Richard Burr are in tight competition, or even the presidential race, because some polls have it fairly close to North Carolina.
So it's very much a targeted vote.
Absolutely. People are kind of gaming to calculating how they're placing their vote. And I think in past years, people would just kind of vote absentee if they were going to vote. And talking to a lot of older friends at the university, they're switching for the first time from registrations that they've kept out of state because they feel this election is so important. They want every single bit of their vote to count in the best it can. And in North Carolina, it's really important. And for some of them, it wasn't so important at home.
David King, you're shaking your head. Yes.
Yeah, let's give a very specific example of that. Nationwide, 42% of college students say that they're going to vote by absentee ballot. Of those who are actually voting, 42% are voting by absentee ballot. But if you went to high school in a swing state and are now going to college in a non-swing state, obviously the strategic choice would be to vote by absentee ballot back home in the swing state. For the college students who are going to school in a state that basically doesn't matter, it's not a swing state, 62% of America's college students in that situation are voting absentee. So there's ample evidence of strategic behavior. They're voting where they think it's going to count the most.
I'm wondering if our student guests are angry, upset or not, by the news from some colleges that the GOP machine is trying to discourage or even challenge college-age voters from voting on campus, telling them that they should vote in their hometowns instead, especially in the battleground states where the votes might, in fact, where their votes might play a significant role. Renata Strauss.
You know, wow, interesting timing for this question, actually. I've been working with a number of student groups on campus and actually a 501c3 that was started in the town to register as many people in Oberlin as possible. And this actually has been all over the newspapers here in the last week. It is very frustrating, I think, because, first of all, federal law has stated that college students should be allowed to vote in the town in which they go to college because they are a part of the community here for the 4 years that they are here. I very much consider myself to be a citizen of Oberlin and am very active in local politics as well as at the federal level. So while I do think that, you know, in part this year it's a strategic vote, but I'm from Pennsylvania, so it's a strategic vote no matter what. You know, I think that it's important to allow college students to stay here. It's also very frustrating simply to think that someone would want to disenfranchise me as a young voter. You know, as my first time voting in a presidential election, and, you know, as was mentioned by Dr. King, you know, for these students for whom, you know, they didn't grow up in a household where voting was common, you know, where their parents took them into the polling place when they were three or four, as mine did, luckily. You know, I think that it's to hear from someone in the established party, either party, that their vote may not count, or threats that they will lose their financial aid, or threats that they will be, you know, that they could be arrested for parking tickets, I've heard too. It's very disheartening. And I wish that both parties would be willing to move in a direction of really building a progressive politics in which all people feel as though they can be included.
Charles Mitchell at Bucknell, are students being discouraged from voting on campus?
I haven't heard any of the local parties doing anything like that. But what I have heard is there's this big thing here at Bucknell about town-gown relations, and I guess it's at every college. You know, everybody thinks that the town hates them. And people registering to vote here contributes to that because the kids here don't know anything about the local races. It's just a fact of life. It's not a derogatory statement. I don't know anything about the local races here either, which is why I vote absentee. So I have not heard anything of the sorts of retribution type stuff that Renata was talking about. And if that's true, that's despicable. But I do understand why people would say, you know, look, vote where you know, vote what you know, because I'm really not big on people casting uninformed votes. And for me, a vote here in these local races will be uninformed. It's the same thing with these, you know, vote or die campaigns and stuff. I don't really believe in that. If you're going to register to vote, you should know what you're voting for. The mere act of voting, I mean, there's nothing sacred about it.
Let me flip topics here for a second, if I can. Three of the four students we have with us this hour are seniors at their colleges and university, which means that you'll soon be on the street looking for jobs. And Ashante, maybe sooner than you want. Ashante, tell us how the state of the economy factors into your decision making this fall.
Economy is a really big factor, not only here in the state of Nevada, but across the country. So when you think about it, you're going to want to be involved and you're going to want to have people in office who you think will help create a better economy, who will secure more jobs. So I definitely know on the UNLV campus that is something that plays a huge factor in people getting out the vote. It's something that we've talked to students a lot about. So for me, knowing that in the spring I'm going to have to get out there in the workforce and start paying into the system, I'm going to want to make sure there's a strong economy.
And so let me interrupt. And so when you talk to fellow students and try and get them to vote for John Kerry instead of George Bush, what are you telling them?
Well, what I tell them is I say, look at the past 4 years. We have lost jobs. Jobs have not been created. Our economy is weak. It is not strong. We need a change, and I feel that change is John Kerry. And when you sit down and you talk to them and you kind of make them realize, you know, hey, I'm going to have to be an adult one day and I'm going to have to be out there, those factors really start to register with young people. And they're going to vote for someone who they feel will create a strong economy, more jobs. That's something else that college-age students want.
And Charles Mitchell, economics and history major at Bucknell, what are you telling people when they express concerns about George Bush's performance on the economy?
Well, a lot of the statements that we've been hearing, I mean, the stuff that Ashante just said is pretty typical. The stuff about losing jobs being not being created. There's a lot of talk here about outsourcing and so-called fair trade and all that. And frankly, it's not accurate to say that jobs have not been created. Jobs have been created. To be right honest with you, it's not as many as it could be, absolutely. But I think, you know, that's the economics part. We have a way to go. There's also the history part. Look at what's happened in the last 4 years. We had a recession to begin with in 2000 and 2001. Then 9/11. Then the accounting scandals. Neither of which were any political party's fault. They weren't George Bush's fault. They weren't Kerry's. They weren't Gore's. The fact that our economy is not in the tank right now, I think, is something that we should be grateful for.
Charles Mitchell, thank you very much. Charles Mitchell from Bucknell University. Ashante Faishel-Golar, also joining us, a senior at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Everyone else stay put. We're going into the break with Jennifer Aniston from the sitcom Friends, telling the 22 million single women who didn't vote in 2000 why they should vote Tuesday. This is On Point.
Let me ask you a question, woman to woman. Would you let someone else choose your clothes, your friends? Okay, what about your husband? No? Then why would you let someone else choose your president, your leaders? 4 years ago, 22 million single women didn't vote and left the choice to someone else. November 2nd, every single one of us can make a difference. So unless you want someone else to make the decision for you, make yourself heard and vote.
This is On Point. I'm Bob Oak, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight to young voters about Tuesday's election. Here, De La Soul's Super Dave West tells his fans in rhyme why they should go to the polls in a Rock the Vote public service announcement.
Hey, yo, what's up? This is David De La Soul, and how do I rap the vote? I take responsibility to influence my destiny. To make a difference starts with me, and so I make this final plea. It's up to us to make that change. To speak our minds in a political range. So register, vote, and represent. Rap the vote. Peace. De La.
First-time voters, who are you listening to? De La Soul, Paris Hilton, Eminem, Mom, your dad? What issues are driving first-time voters to the polls? Give us a call and join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us in the studio is David King, lecturer in public policy at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Also joining us from Oberlin, Ohio, Renata Strauss, senior and political science major at Oberlin College, co-chair of the Oberlin College Democrats. And from Jacksonville, Florida, Andrew Dill, junior and business and political science major at the University of Georgia, chairman of the university's College Republicans in Florida this weekend, campaigning on behalf of the Republican Party. As we get toward the end of the program, I'd like both of our college-age guests to make their case for George Bush and for John Kerry. And Andrew Dill, I'm going to give you the first shot.
Sure. Well, I think that we've talked about here tonight many things that are very important. The economy, the war in Iraq, and those things are very important. I think George W. Bush has been a leader in those things. We heard mentioned, she said, look at the past 4 years on the economy. I say, look at the past 4 years. That's exactly what I tell voters to do. Look at the past 4 years. We have seen some of the most crucial, most critical things that have ever happened in our nation happen during this president's term. He has risen up. He has been a proven leader after 9/11. We could have plummeled on the economy. Charles mentioned that earlier after 9/11, but we haven't. We have risen up. We have a solid economy compared to where it was right after the wake of 9/11. He inherited a recession. He dealt with the war in Iraq. He brought the war to the terrorists instead of allowing the terrorists to come here. We are a safer nation today because George W. Bush is in the White House. That's just a fact. We would not have been able to defend our country had Al Gore been in there. George W. Bush has responded to the attacks. He's defended our country. Jobs are on the rise. They talk about jobs not being added. We've seen 1.7 million jobs added. Yes, it can be better, and it will continue to get better. But let's remember, we are facing the wake of accounting scandals and 9/11. So I feel like that if you want to vote for a president that is going to continue to be strong in Iraq, continue to fight the terrorists wherever they are, no matter what it takes, and to stand by this war in Iraq, to also to protect Social Security for young people, to save the economy, to continue to do well, and to represent morals and values again in this country, I think that your vote should go for George W. Bush.
Okay, Andrew Dill, the light on your podium is on, indicating the end of your statement. And Renata Strauss, we go to you for John Kerry.
It's interesting because I agree that George Bush has been certainly a strong leader in the last 4 years, but I think that he's led this country in the wrong direction. And I think that true leadership, leadership that will take this country in the right direction, is the kind of leadership that will take the blinders off, that will sit down and ask, who isn't at the table? What voice am I not listening to? Rather than simply charging straight ahead with a plan to restructure the Middle East, with a plan to change the way that the tax structure exists in this country, with a plan to take down the structures of choice that have been given to young women since the 1970s. And I think that John Kerry is the person that will carry us forward with that kind of leadership. It is very true that the past 4 years have seen, that in the past 4 years, this nation has seen difficulties unlike any we've seen before. You know, and I think that our generation will really reflect those differences as we grow older. However, the fact remains that we, as young people and as a country, are not in the right place. And I don't believe that John Kerry's John Kerry's candidacy should be defined in terms of what Bush has or has not done to harm the nation in the last 4 years. So given that, I think that John Kerry will provide the right kind of leadership for us. I think he has an excellent plan for young people to be able to put away $4,000 in college tax credits. I believe he will create jobs in this economy. He will preserve a woman's right to choose, which is absolutely fundamental. He will restore our diplomacy and our diplomatic relations with nations abroad, which have been destroyed in the last 4 years. And I think that Theresa Heinz Kerry is going to be a great first lady, too. Go ahead.
One last sentence. Go ahead. The light on your podium's on as well.
Okay. I was just going to say that I think that John Kerry will also be someone that young people can really look up to across the board rather than just be a divisive leader.
Renata Strauss, thank you very much. David King, for their passion, for their articulation and their dedication, all of these young people we've talked to tonight should certainly be applauded.
That's right. We should celebrate them, and we should look forward to increased turnout among college students and non-college young people.
And let me ask you one last question, though. Here's my doubt. Historically, college-age voters are very enthusiastic running up to Election Day, but then go to the polls in very poor numbers. Their turnout relatively low. What will be different this time, in your view?
Well, first off, it's not true that college students have in the past said they're definitely going to vote. The numbers have been down. It was up in 1992, but that was an anomaly. College students have been blasé about politics for the last generation and a half. It's pundits who have wished that they would turn out, but we're seeing remarkable intensity, talking about the campaign, extremely high registration rates. These are motivated and dedicated young people turning on to politics for the first time. Our models have turnout increasing between 20 and 25% on college campuses, and somewhat smaller increases, but still increases among non-college youth.
So you believe it, 84% in your poll, in the Harvard poll, say they'll vote, and you think we'll come close to that?
No, not close to that at all, but we're going to be around 53% for college students and probably up to high 30s for non-college young people.
David King, thank you very much. Lecturer in public policy at the Kennedy School at Harvard, Associate Director of the Institute of Politics at Harvard, and a big thanks to all of our students, including Andrew Dill from the University of Georgia and Renata Strauss from Oberlin College. Continue the conversation online tonight. Go to onpointradio.org and click on Forums. I'm Bob Oakes, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
We're coming down the stretch. There's not many days left. We have a duty in this country to vote, and I'm asking you to get your friends and neighbors to go to the polls.
Next Tuesday, America gets to do... You get to do, each and every one of you can do it between now and then, but it ends Tuesday here in this state, and for a lot of other states it begins. And that's the chance to change the direction of a nation.
ولكنني أعجب منكم فبالرغم من دخولنا السنة الرابعة بعد أحداث الحادي عشر.
This is so much bigger than Kerry and so much bigger than Bush. This is a fundamental problem that we still don't have enough forces even to secure the remaining ammunition dumps that are there. They are the facts.
His criticism of military conduct of our global war on terrorism denigrates, disrespects our troops.
President Arafat has been suffering from an intestinal flu for the last 2 weeks. But obviously there is more to it than that. So it needs a real medical hospital, a good hospital, like the medical military hospital in Clamart.
A 1-0 pitch, here it is. Swinging a ground ball, stabbed by Polk, he has it. He underhands to first, and the Boston Red Sox are the world champions for the first time in 86 years.
And that is the week. George Bush and John Kerry make their final appearances as the presidential campaign dwindles down to its final few days. In a new videotape released on Al Jazeera, Osama bin Laden says American security does not depend on who wins the election, but on U.S. foreign policy. The disappearance of 380 tons of explosives from a cache near Baghdad becomes a hot political issue. Kerry says it shows Bush's incompetence. Bush says Kerry is jumping to conclusions. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat falls seriously ill and is flown to a French hospital for treatment, and the Boston Red Sox win baseball's World Series, their first championship in 86 years. And that, of course, is perhaps the most important news of the week to New Englanders. Jack Beatty, Election Day is now only a few days away. How's the race looking from where you sit?
Well, you know, Nelson Polsby, one of the foremost analysts of elections at Berkeley, says that presidential elections turn on Democratic turnout. That is, there are more Democrats out there, and if they show up, the Democrats win. And in the two elections since 1968 that Democrats have won, leave out 1996 as just an outlier, a continuation of 92, the two elections, 76 and 92, showed upticks. Substantial upticks from the election before in turnout, sort of establishing that notion. Well, of course, this year people are predicting anywhere from 10 to 15. I've even heard some people say 20 million new voters. Now, who are they? Well, in a way, the race is coming down to this. Karl Rove's 4 million evangelicals versus these peripheral voters and new voters and young voters and first-time voters. Karl Rove thought Bush lost in 2000 because he failed to get, he underdrew the base of evangelical voters by perhaps as much as 4 million. And one of the reasons some he thought, or at least some people attributed to him, is that, as you remember, Bush, the news about that Bush had had a drunken driving conviction when he was a young man, and that that soured the evangelicals on the eve of the election. Well, who knows? But the Bush administration has tailored lots of what it's done to go after that vote. And if they turn, so it's really that 4 million versus these peripheral voters. And peripheral voters are people who drop in and out of the electorate. They're less likely to be churchgoers. They're less affluent. And they're more inclined to call themselves working class. Sounds like they might be Democrats. But that's the race, I think. It's the Rove evangelicals versus the new voters, the peripheral voters, and the and young voters. That is the new ones, because Kerry is doing well among all three categories.
As we get closer to Election Day, the number of battleground states, the so-called battleground states, seems to be shrinking. In your mind, this close to Election Day, what states are key at this point?
Well, I think it isn't. It really going to come down to Florida in the end again. I mean, because, for example, in Pennsylvania, there have been 8 polls since the 15th of the month. Bush ahead in 1, Kerry in 6. Kerry is the average of them, 48, 46. Kerry in Michigan, 4 polls. Kerry's led in all 4. The average, 48, 43. In Florida, you've had a situation where Bush has led to... Bush has been up in Florida in the polls slightly. Kerry has been up in 1. Bush has been up in 5. That's Florida, of course, is where the Democrats count on their rush of new voters. So we'll see. But I just do think, if you posit that Kerry takes Ohio, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and Ohio is the other state that where Kerry is up. In the average of these polls, then Kerry wins those states, and it seems to me no matter what happens elsewhere, it does come down to Florida.
Last few days, at least, part of the news cycle has been dominated by the dispute over the 380 tons of high explosives missing from that ammo dump near Baghdad. Do you think that this race might yet turn on another unexpected news event?
Who would have thought that that would have been the October surprise? I mean, if you had to posit a news environment that would be, you know, tough for Bush on the last weekend, I can't imagine anything worse than this, since John Kerry has been saying all along he had no plan to win the peace, didn't put enough troops. Well, that seems to be transparent to fit this reality. That's one piece in the news, and then we have the FBI investigation of Halliburton. In the other, and polls already show that voters are very uneasy about that and about the whole idea of favoritism. So both of these things have happened just at the worst possible time, it seems to me, for the president.
And what do you make of the predictions that have been made about the outcome of this race, and do you have one yet of your own?
No, but I mean, John Zogby has been saying all along, quote, the race is Kerry's to lose. And I don't know where his tongue was in his cheek, but on the Jon Stewart evening show the other night, he said, the Daily Show, he said, Kerry will win this race. I'm not going to go that far, but it does seem to me that, again, it's Democratic turnout versus Rove's 4 million evangelicals. Who will get to the polls?
Okay, well, thankfully, we'll know within a few days.
Or maybe we won't, Bob.
Well, that's true. We might not. This could go on for weeks yet.
Yeah.
Jack Beatty, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Jack Beatty, our On Point news analyst. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarti, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Lauren Madelon and Michael Garth. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Bob Oakes, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.